Bear with me. I have some stuff I really have to read, so it's not typical. I'm going to read a few pages here. The purpose of this hearing is to meet the legal requirements of Article 2 of the Eminent Domain Procedure Law. A notice of the public hearing was published in the Ithaca Journal for 5 consecutive days, beginning February 26, 2010. A copy of the notice of public hearing was sent to the assessment record billing owners potentially affected by the proposed public project. The public notice reads as follows. Notice of public hearing. Please take notice that in accordance with Article 2, Section 202 of the New York State Eminent Domain Procedure Law, notice is hereby given of a public hearing for the Hanshaw Road Reconstruction Project, PIN 375325, Towns of Ithaca and Dryden, and Village of Cuga Heights, Tompkins County. The public hearing will be on March 16, 2010 at 5:30 p.m. at the Tompkins County Courthouse, 320 North Tioga Street, Ithaca, New York. The purpose of this hearing is to outline the project purpose, its proposed location, and to provide other pertinent information. The project is located on Hanshaw Road between its intersections with Pleasant Grove Road in Cuga Heights and Freeze Road in the town of Dryden. Construction will include improved pavement and drainage, a traffic signal at the intersection of Warren Road, and a new sidewalk along the north side of Hanshaw Road from Community Corners to Sapsucker Woods Road. The Village of Cuga Heights and Town of Ithaca will maintain this sidewalk. Construction is planned for 2011. Persons may appear in person or by agent and will be given the opportunity to present oral or written statements and to submit other documents concerning PIN 375325, the Hanshaw Road Reconstruction Project, Towns of Ithaca and Dryden, and Village of Cuga Heights, Tompkins County. Any property owners who may subsequently wish to challenge the condemnation of their property by judicial review may do so only on the basis of issues, facts, and objections raised at this public hearing. As stated in the notice, there are several purposes for tonight's hearing. Number one, provide information on the proposed project and its location. Number two, explain and describe the public use, benefits, and purpose to be served by the project. Number three, discuss the general effects of the proposed project on area residents and the environment. Number four, identify property interests the county will need to acquire in order to accomplish this project. And number five, accept and consider public comments on the proposed project. Hearing procedure. The oral statements made during tonight's session will be recorded. Additionally, various documents have been made available for public inspection. Those documents have been pre-marked as exhibits and will be incorporated into the record of this hearing. Following tonight's session, members of the public are invited to submit written comments or other documents relating to the proposed project. These items should be addressed to Kathy Covert, Clerk of the County Legislature. All written comments and documents will be included as part of the hearing record. As soon as possible after tonight's session, copies of the transcript of this session and the hearing exhibits will be made available to the public for examination without cost during normal business hours here at the County Legislature office. And since there will be a transcript, if anyone has a written statement, it would be very helpful if after you've spoken, if you can pass it up so it can be recorded just as you've written it. A second copy will be available at the Cuga Heights Village Office, 836 Hanshaw Road, Ithaca. Any person who would like to examine these records should contact Kathy Covert, Clerk of the Legislature, at 607-274-5434 or by email at ccovert, that's the letter C, covert, at tompkins-co.org. Determination and findings. At some point within 90 days after the record of this hearing is complete, the entire record will be delivered to the Tompkins County Legislature for consideration and further action. That further action will occur in the form of the legislature rendering its determination and findings concerning this proposed public project. A brief synopsis of the legislature's determination and findings will be published in the Ithaca Journal and mailed to assessment record billing owners. At this point, I'd like now to introduce John Lantman. John will discuss hearing exhibits and present the technical program. At the conclusion of the technical presentation, we'll open the floor for public comments, and that will include the people who are in the room down the hall. So everybody will have a chance to speak who would like to. John.
Thank you. There are several exhibits that are going to be incorporated into the record of this proceeding. These exhibits will be made available for public review. In addition to the exhibits that have been pre-marked and entered into the hearing record this evening, all written public submissions will be entered into the hearing record, collectively as what we're calling exhibit number 9. The notice of tonight's hearing was published in the Ithaca Journal, and that notice, along with the affidavit of publication, has been pre-marked as exhibit 1. In addition to publishing the notice of this hearing in the newspaper, the county mailed notices to each of the assessment record billing owners. The letter notices, along with copies of certified mailing and return receipt documents, have been pre-marked collectively as Exhibit 2. An affidavit of mailing for the letter notices has been pre-marked Exhibit 3. Also available tonight for public inspection is a copy of the design report prepared by Fisher Associates. They're the engineering firm that the county retained to design this project. The design report includes many of the technical details relating to the project, including its scope and evolution, alternatives and environmental, historical, and social matters that were considered. The design report has been pre-marked as Exhibit 4. Advanced detail plans prepared by Fisher Associates based on the design report are available tonight for public inspection. These plans have been pre-marked as Exhibit 5. A PowerPoint presentation has been prepared for the meeting tonight, and that contains technical information on the project as well. Copies of the slides from the presentation have been collectively pre-marked as Exhibit 6. The design for the project involves the acquisition of portions of private property. An abstract request map, which lists 78 properties so identified as of July 2009, is available tonight for public inspection and has been pre-marked as Exhibit 7. Right-of-way maps have been created for 60 of these parcels so far. A set of these 60 maps is also available for public inspection tonight, and this set has been pre-marked as Exhibit 8. At this time, I'd like to show the PowerPoint presentation that I referred to above. And I'd also request, before I do that, that all these pre-marked exhibits be admitted into the record of these proceedings. I'm sorry for the awkward arrangement of this room.
John, you may want to hit the last two lights there so that...
Okay.
John, just a second. Mike?
Martha, I think it would be appropriate if you commented that we received those exhibits.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, John. We've received those exhibits.
Okay, very good. Okay, just to start out, here is the project. The limits of the project are Pleasant Grove Road on the west and just beyond Sapsucker Woods Road on the east. So, for the most part, the project is within the town of Ithaca, but it does extend slightly into Dryden, and it does extend somewhat into Cuga Heights Village as well, the total length of the project being about a mile and a half.
Mike?
Could we invite folks to stand along the side if they want to look at the presentation?
That's fine. Would anybody like to move? I realize you can't see there. John, do the people in the other room, can they see this?
There is a close enough TV out there.
And they can see this.
It's on the camera and they got shot.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so if anybody wants to go out in the hall and watch on the closed circuit camera, that's another option. If you're willing to lose your seat. Or you can come up here.
Anybody else in those benches want to move?
Okay. The desired results of the project are we saw a flash of that bicycle, but to improve safety for all modes of transportation, the bicyclist, the transit user, and the pedestrian. We want to show or improve accommodations for all these users as well. there is a lot of pavement problem out there, to say the least, and we want to improve the structural adequacy of the pavement. We want to correct drainage problems and provide a hydraulically adequate drainage system. We want to preserve the high quality being in the eye of the beholder, right? So we want to preserve vegetation out there, preserve visual elements that make the neighborhood what it is. If we can't preserve them, restore them or replace them, mitigate that impact. Finally, we want to do all this at a cost that is feasible within the budget. We have three sections crossing the road, typical sections that we are proposing for this project. The first one, which is over the majority of the project, includes an offset walkway set off from the shoulder of the road by a 4-foot grass swale area that will be where drainage will be able to run. It will be where mailboxes are placed, traffic or highway signs, things like that. Looking at it in a little different perspective, this 4-foot swale option has some benefits that we like. It separates it, like I said, the walkway from the roadway, and that's good from a safety perspective. We are also looking at the ease of maintenance of this section, the preserving of green space. There's grass there. Most snow storage is provided in this option. There are some drawbacks. It's a little wider, and so there's going to be more impacts possibly on property, right-of-way, and trees, landscaping, and more easements required. The second section is a concrete gutter up against the walkway. In this section, the walkway is brought in to only 1 foot off the edge of the shoulder. The drainage is still between, but there's going to be a concrete gutter where the water will run instead of the grass swale. This is being proposed where there are significant impacts that the wider section would cause. And to mitigate those impacts, we're looking at this sort of a section. Again, some of the benefits and drawbacks of this section. It's a little bit less bicycle-friendly, skipping into the drawbacks, because we've got this gutter section of concrete pavement up against that. Will create a little bit of a joint that is in the middle of the shoulder. So the shoulder will be 4 feet of asphalt and 4 feet of concrete. And so that creates a little bit of a less bicycle-friendly situation. There's also no snow storage provided here. And so the plowing will definitely put the snow into the walkway, but that walkway will be plowed. Good things about this, there will be less right-of-way impacts. The one drawback I didn't mention, the cost, it's more costly than the one that we looked at first, section one. The third section actually has a curved sidewalk for the walkway. This will be provided within the village, and if possible, it may be extended beyond that if cost permits. Again, this is a costly option. It's the most costly option. As the other option two was less bicycle friendly than the first, this one also has its bicycle problems in that the curb creates a hazard for the bicyclists that might tend to shy away from it. There's again no snow storage. The walkway is right there at the shoulder. But one advantage to this is that the curb is considered a barrier curb, and so it does provide some level of protection for the users of the walkway. The pavement, which I hadn't referred to in the earlier slides, is shown as being 15 feet wide. This slide tries to express why that is so. besides the fact that that's what the DOT has stated to us is their narrowest section that they would allow without a curb throughout. Just to provide room for a bus that goes through there frequently with its mirrors, not crossing the center line of the road, to allow people on a bicycle to have a little bit of lateral movement when they ride, and to stay away from that gutter joint, we need that 15 feet. You may have noticed if you came to the open house earlier tonight that the stripe on the road would be placed at 10 feet, though the road, the highway part where vehicles drive will be built 11 feet wide, but we'll stripe it at 10 feet. So we're leaving 10 feet of lane, 5 feet of shoulder. Okay, I mentioned easements will be needed because of the additional width. Right-of-way out there does vary. This sort of shows a little movement of the picture here. Let's see. We're building up the sidewalk, and so we need to not have a drop-off off the edge of the sidewalk. And typically, we would be able to just bring that down steeply within what's considered a permanent easement width. We're also looking at the possibility of extending that out farther through temporary easements, so the grade would be more conducive for maintenance of the lawn as well as for drainage. Some places we aren't going to be able to get a grade like that across the sidewalk, where we will be forced to put an inlet drain on the lawn side of sidewalk. I just have a couple of pictures showing simulated features. Here is an overlay showing the width of the shoulder, the 4-foot swale area where that would be, which is paved now in this picture, and the new sidewalk area. In this slide, it shows it in front of the existing fence still. Here's another shot, same idea with the swale and the sidewalk. Here we're showing the concrete gutter. Instead of the 4-foot width beyond the shoulder, only 1-foot width, and then the walkway beyond that. And again, this is at the Warren Road intersection where we would have a similar situation. The walkway, the limits of the walkway definitely per our plan are from community corners at the gas station up to Salem Drive. The town of Ithaca has stated that they would like the county to investigate, design, and purchase right-of-way to extend the sidewalk all the way out to Sapsucker Woods Road. Whether or not that is built ultimately will depend upon the cost once we have bids. The sidewalk is only shown on the north side of the road. Maintenance and liability have been agreed from both the Village of Cayuga Heights and the Town of Ithaca as responsibilities that they will assume. And of course, the permanent and temporary easements will be required to do the construction. I mentioned temporary easements earlier for the sake of grading. Temporary easements for construction use are also, that's another explanation of the temporary easements, so that people can get the work done. One thing that we've talked about is color shoulder treatments. This has been considered as a traffic calming measure. And again, though, the problem is our budget. It'll be in the plans, but whether or not we can actually build it at this time will be seen once construction bids are received. Warren Road intersection. We have done a safety analysis at the intersection and found that the accident rate there was quite a bit higher than what you'd expect at similar intersections statewide. So What we're looking to do is install a three-color traffic signal, or at least the infrastructure for that. Warrants are met, but in the future, we're looking at probably 5 to 8 to 10 years, perhaps, when the warrants will be met for that three-color signal to be operational. In the meantime, we're considering whether or not that signal should be operated as a flashing beacon with red four-way stop, as it is now. During construction, we're looking at a detour needed to speed construction. We're talking about what's called stage construction, allowing one side of the road to be worked on, then the other side. We would do this as a one-way detour eastbound after conference with the fire department. They preferred that the eastbound direction be maintained as a detour, and that eastbound, which lane carried the eastbound traffic, would change during the course of traffic or during the course of construction, but that would be the direction. Westbound traffic would be using the detour, which is shown in red, going around on 13. Driveway and side street access would be maintained. Warren Road would be available so that people wouldn't have to go all the way to the end of Sepsucker Woods or Freese Road if they, for those that are on the western end of the project at least, they could use Warren Road as a means to get around. Okay, some additional points. Utility impacts. There probably will be several utility poles that need to be relocated. We do not see full wholesale movement of utility poles, but there will be some. Lighting, we have not shown any additional lighting. Additional drainage outlet. Okay, this refers to the main water flow through that area is actually the headwaters of Renwick Brook, and currently it outlets in the area of K Street, Orchard Street. And what we're planning on doing, because there was a flooding situation that was brought to our attention during preliminary design, we're looking at splitting the flow so that we're always going to be maintaining some flow in the existing open channel that starts in that Orchard Street area. But we will also be diverting some of the flow via pipeline to Blackstone and discharging that into the channel downstream of the Blackstone crossing. Eminent domain hearing, here we are. This is going on, and someone from our real estate or right-of-way consultant will be speaking to you further about that issue. Non-standard design features. The non-standard features that we have are the width of the road already. The design calls for there to be 8-foot shoulders and 12-foot lanes. Due to the context where this road is, through a neighborhood, we have petitioned the state to allow us to go with that 11-foot lane, 4-foot shoulder, 15 feet of pavement. And as I stated earlier, that's what they that's the minimum they would allow us to go to. Project construction funding, 5% is the local share at this time. That's what we're expecting at least. The county, town, village, and actually a share from Cornell's Transportation Initiative will be used to fund that local share. 15% is traditionally available from the state. It's yet to be seen. And 80% federal funds are what is shown on the Transportation Improvement Program. And the total budget is shown. Project schedule, we're having our hearing tonight. We have right-of-way that we hope to attain all the final purchases by the fall in September. Then we will be looking at bidding construction and awarding that in January, with construction starting in the spring of 2011. As was stated earlier, we are taking formal comments tonight, and those comments will be received until the April 6th legislature meeting. At this time, as I mentioned, the county is required to acquire the property rights necessary for the construction of the project. And to explain the property acquisition process, I would like to introduce Tina Mollenkamp, a representative of our right-of-way consultants, RK Height & Company.
Thank you, John. Good evening. Essentially, there are four steps in the right-of-way acquisition process: an initial meeting with each property owner, the property appraisal, establishing just compensation, and negotiating a settlement and transfer in title to the county. The primary goal through the process is to negotiate a fair settlement with each property owner. The first step in the process is a preliminary meeting between each property owner and a property rights specialist employed by the county's right-of-way consultant, RK Height. The property rights specialist contacts the owner to schedule a convenient time to meet at his or her property. The specialist assigned to this project, so far Nancy Mullen and myself, who we've already met with many of the property owners. At this meeting, the specialist provides the owner with information about the acquisition process and an explanation of the proposed property impacts. She will also inspect the property and gather preliminary information. This same person will also handle settlement negotiations, so owners will only be dealing with one contact if questions come up. The next step in the process is the real property appraisal. The appraisal will be used to determine the fair market value of the property rights to be acquired. The appraiser will first research and analyze the real estate market in the area. Comparable sales data and other market information will be reviewed. Next, the appraiser will inspect each property and gather site-specific information. Owners will be given the opportunity to accompany the appraiser during this visit. People should take advantage of this offer, since no one knows a property better than its owner does. Finally, the appraiser will prepare a report to document his or her findings and state the fair market value of the property rights to be acquired. Based on the appraisal, the county will establish an amount it believes to be just compensation. Just compensation is the price the county must pay to acquire your property. This amount will not be less than the highest approved appraisal value for your property. We try to offer an amount that reflects the price a willing buyer and a willing seller would agree in the open market. To avoid any possible confusion, we will prepare a written offer for each property. The offer will include a statement of the just compensation amount, the basis for the just compensation amount, and a description of the property and the interest to be acquired. Nancy or I will contact each property owner and schedule a convenient time to meet to deliver and review the written offer. I'd like to stress one point. While we use the word negotiator, we in fact work under what is called a one-offer system. We are required by law to offer the full amount of the highest approved appraisal. So unless there are compelling reasons to raise the offer, we will stand by the one-offer amount. Once the owner accepts the offer, we will prepare the necessary papers and schedule a closing. The closing is similar to other real estate transactions. In summary, the process to acquire real property on this project is a four-step process. First, meet with each property owner to provide information on the project and propose potential impacts to their property. Second, appraise the property to determine fair market value. Third, the fair market value will be used by the county to establish just compensation. Finally, once the county has established just compensation, prepare and deliver a written offer to each affected property owner. We understand that the right-of-way process may be new to you. I'd like to assure you that we will try our best to make it as easy as possible for you. The county will make every effort to acquire the property by negotiations. This concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I will be available after the meeting.
Thank you, Tina. At this time, I'd like to open the floor for public comment. I'd like to call to your attention the fact that the required format for this public hearing does not allow us to respond to your statements and questions at this time. However, all statements and comments received will be considered in the preparation of the determination and findings. Now, I have a list of people who wish to comment this evening. When I call your name, please come to the podium and state your name and address for the record, and be as clear as possible. We've allotted 3 minutes for each individual to address the hearing, and Kathy has the one-minute signs to hold up. As necessary, the county will provide written responses to comments received tonight. And remember, please speak clearly, and if you have a written statement, pass it up once you're finished. Are there more blue forms at the back there? So if anybody, as you're listening, if you want to speak, you can fill one out and pass it up as well. The first speaker is Carolyn Arnold, to be followed by Doug Britton.
Thank you. My main concern is drainage
issues. I'm sorry, please state your name.
I'm sorry. Carolyn Arnold, 1502 Hanshaw Road.
Thank you.
My concern is the effect of this project on drainage issues on my property and possible effect on the life of the trees. Also, there's some concerns about the width of the right-of-way, which I don't fully understand at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Doug Britton and Bernie Hutchins after Doug.
Folks, Doug Britton, 135 Warren Road. Thank you all for listening. Very briefly, I think that the residents of Hanshaw Road deserve better. Even though I am not one of them, I think they deserve better. Initially in this project, there was talk of traffic calming, but unfortunately what they wound up with was just the opposite. The roads, as you know, are scheduled to be wider, which will make the cars drive more quickly, and it will make the drivers less attentive. It will also make it considerably more dangerous to drive across the road if you're a pedestrian, because the road is wider, it takes longer, the gaps between traffic are less when the road is wider, the cars are going more quickly, it's less easy for them to stop before they hit you, and if they do, there's a greater chance something bad's going to happen. So that is a significant consideration that I have not heard mentioned here today. Obviously, you will be losing your neighborhood character in spite of the supposed efforts to try to preserve it. Intersection with Warren, if you put a light in there, actually, I beg to disagree with John. It does not, in fact, meet the warrants for a traffic light. It only does if you pretend that it is currently a two-way stop, because then the traffic that has the stop sign, if it's just waiting for all those other cars, it would take a long time for them to get out, but you already have a four-way, so in fact it does not meet the warrants for that. And if you put a traffic light in, you can't expect longer delays, because even off hour you are going to have cars will have to sit there sometimes for 30 seconds of red light. Now you come up, you look both ways, you go. So it's going to delay traffic and increase pollution around that intersection. Okay, good part of the plan, sidewalk. That's great. Trouble is, the sidewalk is outside the right-of-way. It doesn't need to be. The reason the sidewalk is outside of the right-of-way is because the road's so big. The road doesn't have to be that big. The road is not actually being made wider because it has to be to make it safe. If I may quote from Appendix G of at least the 2007 version of John's report, it says, and I quote, "The existing shoulder area was not a contributing factor to any accidents within the project limits," unquote. So it's not that the shoulder is too narrow and has caused problems in the past. Also, this section, this Hanshaw, has lower accident rates than the state's average, and it does seem a little funny to be taking the road and modifying it so that it's more like roads that have a greater number of accidents. It seems like the wrong way to go. Physically, cars don't need more space. If you look, I better hurry. Okay. Cars do not use all the pavement that is there. There's gravel at the edge of the road where cars don't drive. We don't need to make it wider in order to fit the cars. If you make it wider, if the gravel on the shoulder, bikes don't like to ride in the gravel on the shoulders, like riding in the marbles. If you look at where bikes ride, they tend to ride in the clear wheel rut, typically the right-hand one. So where the cars drive, that's where the bikes go. So it's not being done for them. The reason that they have wide shoulders on roads is a couple things. ASHTO thinks it provides a comfortable detachment from the surrounding land uses, which they consider good. And the Highway Capacity Manual, what it does if you widen the shoulders is it increases the free speed of the cars and it reduces the headway, which if you think they're already speeding and tailgating, it'll make it worse. And you think they're already ignoring your neighborhood, well, that'll make that worse too.
So what if you could wrap up.
I will. So what I would like to do, see, instead of this, is to make the road no wider than it is now. They already go too fast. To leave the sidewalk in the right-of-way, tell NYSDOT, this is what we want. If you don't build it, we'll let the road deteriorate. And I think if you're doing this for me, I'm the motoring public, I don't want it. I'd rather see something more modest. Thank you.
Well said.
Bernie Hutchins. If we could just have the speakers, please. Bernie Hutchins and then Bruce Levin.
Bernie Hutchins, 1016 Nantra Road. On February 16, 2010, immediately following the legislature meeting during which Mr. Wood gave misleading information about the situation regarding my property, I sent a letter to Mr. Mariana relating language of an email from John Landman dated October 23, 2009. The email misled me. It clearly does not mention the need for a permanent easement. I did not learn of this permanent easement until January 21, 2010, through an email from, or a mailing from Height. I, a well-known opponent of the project, was the last of all the property owners to be notified. Plan maps for August of 2007 and March of 2009 showed no easements on my property while showing easements on the adjacent properties. From the information I received from the county on February 6, 2010, requested under FOIL, I find Jan Landman wrote in part to Nancy Mullen on January 22, 2010. I have not yet figured out why we would want to deceive him, since the map to the contrary would be soon delivered to him. Anyway, he says the measure has promised us we would not need additional permit right away, and now he's upset that the map shown that he do. Sorry for adding to your work on this property. I'm sure it will be difficult enough as it is. Note that John Lampman's notion of soon is 3 months. Okay, this delay in informing us has prevented us from having material facts, which we should have had, from coordinating with our neighbors, and is to our disadvantage. Other property owners have been given no details of the evidence as to how their current right-of-way by use was determined. We're told by John Lampman, October of 2009. As you remember, Rich Brower and I had said the ownership for the majority of the roadside properties, just over 50%, did not extend to the center of the road. This is true, says John. Previously, he had stated it was 90% that did not deed to the center line. The town board, 2006, Mr. Lampman reported that initially they went through the deeds for the landowners on the corridor and found some amount, approximately 75%, contained written references to the width of the public right-of-way.
1 minute, Mr. Hutchins.
Within the deed. Another substantial amount, bringing the total close to 90%, included a map that would show that. So we're happy with the revision from 90 to 50%. I wonder if it's perhaps not zero that don't deed to the center. I've been arguing this right-of-way issue with the county since 2005. Coddington Road decision showed that the right-of-way was by actual use. The actual use was then agreed in the county, John Lampman, in October 23rd of 2009. He said, I hate to say you told us so, but you told us so. If I were keeping score, that's Bernie 2, County 0. So what is eminent domain? A few years ago, Ms. Herrera, in agreement with Mr. Lane, characterized eminent domain as a negotiating tool. Unless I misunderstand, Ms. Herrera is an electrician, a skilled craftsperson who understands that tools are used by honest, productive people. Thieves, on the other hand, do not use tools. They use weapons. Eminent domain is a weapon.
Mr. Hutchins, need to wrap up.
I've got one page here. Short. We are the property owners on Hanshaw Road. Does the county perhaps hold us in complete disdain? Do they think perhaps that we are not paying attention? We are people of a multitude of talents and likely of disparate viewpoints and opinions. But we are to a person, not people who can be taken for granted or pushed around without fighting back. I urge the county to keep this in mind.
If you want to submit your written statement, please, that will help the staff. Bruce Levitt, then Eileen Lambias. I'm very sorry to ruin your name.
Thank you. Bruce Levitt, 1002 Hanshaw Road in the village of Cayuga Heights. I'm puzzled about how Cayuga Heights properties got swept into this project, since the village of Cayuga Heights has never held a public hearing on the extension of the sidewalk from the town line into the village. Cayuga Heights has never voted the funding for the extension of the sidewalk from the town line into the village. Every time I talk to Brent Cross, he says, well, as soon as we get money, the bid, the estimate of what it will cost, then maybe we'll fund it, maybe we won't fund it. Cayuga Heights has never held an eminent domain hearing about the taking of our property. Cayuga Heights has said it is allowing the county to acquire parcels within Cayuga Heights, but yet again, Cayuga Heights has never held a public hearing on this matter. There is no written provision for property in the village to be restored should plantings be damaged or removed, should the sidewalk be extended from the town line to the village. And finally, there's been no discussion with NYSIG about the movement of their telephone poles on various properties. So there's been no coordination, no public meeting. It's impossible to find out what's going to happen to our properties in Cayuga Heights because of Cayuga Heights' intransigency in this matter. And there's no coordination between the county, Cayuga Heights, and NYSIG about the movement of telephone poles. If the poles have to move onto my property further to avoid the sidewalk, it's going to be the destruction of 10 to 12 trees. And I'm not sure who's going to pay for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. And the next one, I'm not sure if it's Warren Ryan. It's 11 South Street, Dryden. Dryden. So that's you, Malin? Okay. Malin, then you're after Eileen.
Eileen Lambies, and I'm a resident at 406 East Upland Road, but I'm reading the statement on behalf of Zeta Sproul, who's a resident of an impacted property at 1031 Hanshaw Road. And her letter is addressed to the Tompkins County Legislature regarding the current eminent domain hearing. As a longtime resident of Hanshaw Road in the town of Ithaca, and as one from whom the county is seeking a permanent property easement for the proposed road reconstruction, I have a number of concerns, including the following. I do not understand why any more property is needed at my location than is already in use. There is no planned sidewalk or bikeway on my side of the road. Please explain the public use of the land for which the county is now requesting a permanent easement from me. Number two, neither the map nor the description I have been given of this requested permanent easement is comprehensible to me. Please provide the same in layman's terms. And I was going to read it, but it's, you don't want to hear about 1.33 degrees north, south, of east, of west, but it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless you're a surveyor. Number three, I want to be present when measurements are made and marked out for the length of my property indicating both the current use right-of-way and the proposed permanent easement. I'm requesting that the distances for both from the center of Hanshaw Road be clearly spelled out in writing. For example, layman's terms. The current use right-of-way is 17 feet from the center of Hanshaw Road, which would be extended to 19 feet from the center of Hanshaw Road with the proposed easement. If the distances are not consistent across my entire property, ranges can be made along with a clear enlarged map providing the exact distances. There has been much confusion as to right-of-way, and I think that a clear, understandable written and map description may prevent future generations from having to go through this again. There has also been a great deal of confusion relative to my fence, my lamppost and sign, and my landscaping that fronts Hanshaw Road. I had been told on one occasion that it would be left untouched by the project. On another occasion, that it is in the road right-of-way, which it is not, and that I would need to move all of it. And yet on another occasion, that even though it's not in the right-of-way, I should move it before it gets damaged by the road workers. Can somebody please clarify? And why should I have any financial burden in any of this? Before I'm able to consider granting a permanent easement, I need to be able to understand precisely what I'm being asked to grant and why. Unfortunately, the manner in which the county's representatives have provided residents with inconsistent and erroneous information over the last 4 or 5 years has created a negative, even hostile, and suspicious environment.
1 minute.
The suggested potential use of eminent domain has only added fuel to the fire. As the owner of one of the properties that will be impacted by the county's plans, I have a right to ask for and be provided with accurate and truthful information on which to base my decisions. Thank you for your time. Sincerely, Zetta Arsbell.
Malin Perkins, who should have been a doctor with his handwriting, followed by Edward Harwood.
Malin Perkins, 11 South Street, Dryden, New York. I'm here on behalf of Dr. and Mrs. Byenbach, the Roycemans, and Mr. and Mrs. Carruthers. I'm not here to argue the final design report and all of that. I'm here to talk about what I see as a fatal flaw in the proceedings. And that is that in order to forcibly take someone's property, and that's what eminent domain is, it's taking your property against your will. But in order to do that, you have to have a map which shows what it is you want to acquire. And I think that the maps that these owners along Hanshaw Road have been furnished are completely inaccurate. And I don't fault so much the surveyor and the engineers as I do the county. Now, the county knows that this is a highway by use. And the county has no, at least for my clients, no easements, rights of way, licenses, appropriations, maps, or anything at all in document form which would establish the right of way anywhere than by use. So what I did was I took your map and I blew it up a little bit on my copier, and I colored in here in yellow the area that the county proposes to acquire. Now, this is the Byenbach property, and this is a temporary easement. Our position is that you have not addressed the area in blue. The area in blue represents the area between the edge of the asphalt shoulder and the area depicted on the temporary easement. Our position is, since you have no documentation, the area acquired by you, so the public easement, is the pink area, and you must address this area. In all three of these cases, I estimate that the area that is not correctly shown is anywhere from 90 to 100% more than you're proposing to acquire. So I think the first thing you need to do is to meet with the property owners and agree where the highway by use is. And if you can't agree, that's fine. You know, that'll be another discussion. But clearly, where you don't have a ditch and when you don't have any documentation, the highway by use is limited to the travel portion of the road. And we know that from the Coddington Road case. So I urge you to take a hard look at this before you make a fatal mistake and try to rely upon these, which I believe are inaccurate. Thank you.
Is that a map you could... Is that something you can leave?
I attached copies of those to my written comments.
Okay. Thank you, Malin. Edward Harwood and then Darlene Gold.
My name's Ed Harwood. I live at 1114 Hanshaw Road and have since 1994. On the map that's been provided, I have a fairly sizable piece of property and being considered. And the reason is that I have a number of trees there that add to the, I guess, to the ambiance of the road. And so the proposal, and so far to my agreement, the sidewalk can then go further into the property, avoid the trees, and provide something, I think, potentially more attractive. The issue that I have are two ownership issues. The first one is, as the previous gentleman indicated, it's really very unclear as to what the county owns and what I own. There's deed documents, but then there's also statements as to how much the county owns from the center line. And so there's still confusion, even asking this evening, how wide does the county have? The number I was given was 25 feet, and on this map, it goes anywhere from 18 to over 30 feet, the difference between the center line and the property that's my property that's being considered. The second issue is, if this sizable piece of parcel becomes part of the county. I understand that you'll take care of the sidewalk, but what happens to the rest of the property? It's no longer my property, so what happens to that property between myself and the road? Thank you.
Charlene Gold, then Rob Rosen.
Hello, my name is Darlene Gold, and I live at 1106 Hanshaw Road. My house is being negatively impacted by this project. My house is the house most severely impacted by this project because currently the house is located 32 feet from the public walkway. So I'm very, very close to the road as it is. I've been given so much information that when I come to this meeting, now it's not even accurate. So the statement that I've written feels sloppy now, but my house is on the north side of the street, and all of the windows that allow light into my house are on the south side of the street, which faces Hanshaw Road. So when this project is completed, the public is going to be 22 feet away from my kitchen, my front door, which is glass, and my office where I work. During the temporary easement part of the project, the machinery and the workers will be 10 feet from my kitchen window and my front door and my office. As a result of the project, if I want sunshine, I'll have to forego privacy. If I want privacy, I'll have to forego sunshine. So I have the option of shutting myself into my house. I bought this house in 2008. I have not heard about it until the fall of 2009. Had I known, I would not have purchased this house. I object to this project, and yet it's been made clear to me that I have no rights to prevent these changes to my property. It's also been made clear to me that adequate compensation for my losses is unlikely. This project significantly lowers the property value, curb appeal, saleability, and living conditions of my home. One realtor indicated that it was likely that the county's changes to my property would result in a loss of 12 to 13% of its current value. Despite these impending losses of property value, I have received indication from the county hired appraiser that it is very unlikely that I am going to be fairly or adequately compensated for these losses. We know how much careful thought, legal, and logistical work goes into creating budgets for projects of this scale. So it seems to me that not having enough money is not a valid reason for failing to compensate homeowners for property and value damage committed by this project. The information we had on PowerPoint is that this is a $3.7 million project. Yet when the county-appointed appraiser came to my house and saw how the project would impact my specific property, he said, well, I'll do my best, but I really don't have that much to work with. We know what that means. Didn't the county's project budget include monies for compensation for acquiring properties made uninhabitable or for paying for the loss of property and market value? If the county had planned on treating its tax-paying property-owning residents fairly, there would be funds in the budget for fair and accurate compensation, and there would be no need for the county to pull the eminent domain card. In effect, and I say this with respect, it feels that the county is stealing from me, but even worse, it is with premeditated intent. I object to this project. And I object to the underhanded and dishonest way that it has been conducted up to this point. And maybe this project doesn't impact you. Maybe you don't live on Hanshaw Road. But if we allow the county to infringe upon our rights and to use bureaucratic process against us in this case, what's to prevent them from using this again against all of you? Thank you.
Bravo. Rob Rosen, and then Mr. Beyenbach.
Hi, my name is Rob Rosen. I live at 206 Sapsucker Woods Road, right off Hanshaw. And my daughter and I ride our bicycles and walk up and down Hanshaw Road often, and it's really very dangerous without a sidewalk. It's unpleasant and unfriendly, and a sidewalk would just make it so much easier for adults and children to walk and ride their bicycles. It'd be so much healthier. I mean, trying to walk or bike to a commercial center like Community Corners, where the sidewalk, the shoulder on Hanshaw Road is like 1 foot wide, you can really take your life in your hands trying to walk to Community Corners. And this is going to be a huge improvement, and it would be great if you could extend the sidewalk all the way to Sapsucker Woods Road, because now every day there's dozens of people that walk and bike up and down Sapsucker Woods Road to go to the bird sanctuary, and I know it would be a lot safer for them if they had sidewalks and wider shoulders. And I'd be happy to give up 4 feet of my ditch to have a sidewalk go all the way to the bird sanctuary, really. And I just hope you compensate people fairly, but I think this would be a really big improvement, and I hope you can get it all the way to Sapsucker Woods Road.
Mr. Beinbeck, and then Bruce Britton is next.
My name is Klaus Beinbach. I live on 1024 Hanshaw Road, and I lived there since 1978. So I know this neighborhood quite well. It is a residential neighborhood. There is no question that Hanshaw Road needs attention. Traffic has been steadily increasing over the years. The road has deteriorated, and speed limits are not being enforced. Thus, while I welcome the repair of the road, I must voice my displeasure over the disregard of neighborhood concerns. It appears that in order to obtain substantial federal and state funds for this project, the road project must have a sidewalk. In order to add a sidewalk, the road must be widened, and the county must acquire land from property owners for public use. It is my understanding that public use has not been properly established in that, for example, a survey, that is, account of pedestrian traffic along Hanshaw Road has not yet been made. With few exceptions, residents along the north side of Hanshaw Road are asked to give up property. While everybody can understand the financial savings gained by widening the road only on one side, it is nevertheless unfair. If it is indeed the wish of the residents along Hanshaw Road to have a sidewalk, then all should share in the sacrifice of property for having the sidewalk. In the present planning of Hanshaw Road project, the planners have succeeded in dividing the neighborhood along the north side versus the south side. This eminent domain hearing is premature, because there are disagreements at several properties over what the county thinks it owns and what the residents maintain they own. In our case at 1024 Hanshaw, the county simply maintains a position of ownership when that position is not supported in the deed we have. Thus, the eminent domain hearing today has the appearance of a threat if we do not accept the county's claim to part of our property. Other issues have not been yet adequately addressed. These are, one, pedestrian safety for a sidewalk that has no curb. Two, traffic calming measures for a widened road surface that will invite speeding. Three, cars passing on the right, moving on the sidewalk. Four, pedestrian street crossing if the sidewalk is only on one side of the road. Five, the relocation of mailboxes. Six, property restoration plans. And seven, reassessments of property values in view of lost property. As in previous hearings about the Hanshaw Road project, one gets the impression that these hearings are held because they are required by law. So far, concerns from the neighborhood have been belittled or ignored. The new Hanshaw Road must not only be an improvement for the road, but also for our properties and quality of our residential neighborhood. Thank you.
Bruce Britton and then Deborah Cowan.
Good evening. Bruce Britton, 135 Warren Road. I think this is a poor execution of a good idea. Just to summarize my concerns, Hanshaw Road should be rebuilt with a lower rather than a higher design speed. Increasing the pavement width is likely to increase vehicle speed, decrease driver attentiveness, and lead to decreased safety. The loss of vegetation is regrettable and avoidable. It should be possible to fit two travel lanes and a sidewalk and shoulders within a 50-foot right-of-way. Shifting the road center line may be necessary at some spots to go around significant vegetation. That should be possible. The Warren Road, Hanshaw Road intersection is already too big. If you go look at it, which I did this afternoon, there's gravel on the edges of the intersection. That's an indication that vehicles don't drive. They are not using the full width of the pavement currently. Making the intersection bigger seems to be a waste of effort. Installation of traffic light is not warranted now, will not be warranted for the next 20 years. According to the manual and uniform traffic control devices, if the warrants are not met within 1 year, the light should be removed. I see no point in putting it there. And the traffic light will lead to increased delays and likely increased severity of accidents. The proposal seems to run counter to the NEST's study, which the county and the town were both part of developing, which advocated for smaller roads and residential neighborhoods. The legal notice in the Ithaca Journal indicated that any property owners who may subsequently wish to challenge the condemnation of their property by judicial review may do so only on the basis of issues, facts, and objections raised at the hearing. I would therefore like to enter into evidence the following items in the hopes that they might prove useful to someone's attempts to improve the design of the project. One, photographs of gravel on the pavement of the Warren Road and Hanshaw Road intersection, which provide evidence that the intersection is already too large. Two, a memo to John Lampman from Doug Britton and Bruce Britton, dated April 13, 2007, which reiterates or spells out more clearly many of our concerns. A copy of that will be attached and handed on up. The Northeast Subarea Transportation Study. This is dated July 1999. That's available on the web. The Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, dated December 2009. That's available on the web. Town of Ithaca Transportation Plan, dated 2007, available on the web. And the Forest Home Traffic Calming Plan Final Report, dated 2007, available on the web. How am I doing on time?
Another minute.
1 minute. Okay. I'll just read a quick quote here from the Town of Ithaca Transportation Plan. Instead of improving network capacity by adding lanes, widening existing lanes, or increasing the design speed, the town needs to advocate for roadway designs that are compatible with adjacent land uses and that elicit safe driver behavior while recognizing current traffic loads. The town needs to protect and promote safety and livability in residential areas with residential streets designed to naturally elicit responsible driver behavior rather than facilitate high vehicle flow rates. Narrower roads with lower design speeds or the addition of appropriate traffic calming measures may lead to the slower, more careful driving that is appropriate for residential neighborhoods. Therefore, whenever a section of road in the town is rebuilt, rather than being restricted by the functional classification system's somewhat abstract labels alone, the town needs to work to address any known safety problems and to ensure the new roadway design is suitable for and compatible with the adjoining land uses. In many cases, this involves coordination with the county and state for roads not under the town's jurisdiction. Why don't I stop there? I can hand in written comments. And thank you very much.
Thank you. The last speaker I have is Deborah Cowan. If there's anybody else, then you can just follow and come up to the mic. If there's anybody in the other room, please, who'd like to speak, now would be a good time to come on. Come on over to this room.
Good evening. My name is Deborah Cowan, and I live at 1022 Hanshaw Road in Ithaca. I'd first like to say that I'm distressed by the notion that the homeowners of Hanshaw Road are commanded to bring issues, facts, and objections to this hearing now if they subsequently wish to challenge something which has not yet occurred. We are enjoined to speak now or forever hold our peace based on project plans and information that we do not yet have. Those portions of the project plans and information we do have seem to be changing, even tonight. When I was next door, there were things there that were not included on the information I received from Height. So it seems to be something that is a bit of a moving target. And I find this unfair and unacceptable. I believe that government is representative of us, the citizens, and I expect you to protect and nurture my individual rights as well as the rights of our community. I don't see the contract between citizen and representative government being honored in this instance. I believe both my temporary easement map and the legal description of temporary easement, which I was provided, I believe they are both based on inaccuracies. It's my contention, which I believe is supported by the recent Cottington Road court decisions, among others, that the county right-of-way is limited to the roadway's actual use for public travel. At my property, the travel lane is 11 feet wide, and the asphalt shoulder of the road is approximately 4 feet wide, which would put the county's right-of-way at my property at 15 feet. And I would hereby request, again, because I've asked before, that I be provided with written documentation of the county's right-of-way on my property. The temporary easement map is difficult to read and decipher. I requested a larger scale map from the Height representative during her visit to my property, one which would show the location, position, and width of the roadway, the shoulder, the gutter, the curb, and the walkway, and the corresponding rights of way and requested easements. This was never provided me, so I hereby again request a detailed map of sufficient size and clarity to be readable and comprehensible to a layperson. The legal description for temporary easement is written in such a manner that one would need proficiency with a surveyor's transit to make sense of the impact on their property.
1 minute, please.
I hereby request a clear description in layman's terms of the temporary easement using easily observed reference points such as center line of Hanshaw Road. I have also asked for documentation of contractual arrangements covering walkway maintenance, repair, snow removal, and liability issues, which then-Supervisor Kathy Valentino, at a public hearing, promised homeowners would be written into any highway contracts with the county or state. I am aware of town law concerning sidewalk maintenance, but as Ms. Valentino famously said at one of our public hearings, we can rescind anything. I believe we need the security of a contract by the county and the state. In closing, I would like to say that I hope you will do better by us in terms of providing information in a comprehensible and timely fashion so that we may understand what we are being asked and why, and to better hold to your compact to represent and protect the rights of your constituency. Thank you for your time and your attention.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Go ahead. Please state your name and your address.
Hello, my name is Hillary Acton. I live at 1041 Hanshaw. I'd like to reiterate I support everything the previous speaker said. Is this that queen?
Yes, please.
I am a little upset, partly due to the fact that I didn't even know this meeting was happening until 2 days ago. I do not get the Ithaca Journal. I did not receive any written notice. And I only happened to stumble upon the notice on the Warren and Hanshaw crossway there when I happened to be forced to come up to Warren to come back to my house because I couldn't get onto the regular exit off of 13. So I just happened to stumble upon a signage for this meeting. The fact that we are to forever be silent if we don't raise our concerns tonight is very upsetting to me that I didn't really have time to prepare a written speech for this. I have no information as to the workers interaction onto my property. I currently reside on the south side, so I will not have the impact of the domain of property, but I'm concerned about my fence and my landscaping and what damage may be done from all the trucks and whatnot. And I just feel like you have really failed us as a neighborhood.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak?
Hi, thank you. My name is Donna Heilweil. I'm at 1464 Hanshaw, and I would just like to thank everybody for presenting today and put on the record the request that all of the comments, statements, suggestions, and thoughts that my neighbors have put forth be considered to apply to everybody who is in the affected area and equally. Thank you.
Anyone else? If there's anybody else who'd like to speak, why don't you come and stand behind this gentleman so we have a sense of who else is coming forward. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Owen Huckinga. I reside at 1430 Hanshaw Road. I would like to say that I'm in favor of sidewalks and increasing the safety for all users of the Hanshaw Road corridor. Not to speak tales of myself, but I seem to be one of the younger homeowners in the area. I have small school-age children. In 1 year, my son is going to have to get himself up to the middle school. So I would like to see, cognizant of everyone's fears, that my children's safety is protected. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I intended to be a spectator. Dave Collum, 1456 Hanshaw Road. Just because of the legality, I want to say, I don't think you have the right of way. It'll hit my property values. I'll have lost the trees, and I'm worried about the maintenance of the sidewalk. What bothers me more, actually, is the fact that we're doing this because the feds are giving us the money, and it appears to be, despite some people who want the sidewalks, I understand the argument. I understand Peter's argument. You got a lot of people here who don't want them, so you guys come off as we're from the government, we're here to help, and we don't want your help. If they gave us $3.7 million and put it in the bank, would we spend it on sidewalks? I doubt it. I'm becoming a militant libertarian in my old age here. I'd like to take out the feds in some way. You know, if anyone does, it's not me, but I'd like to. I think it's appalling, actually, that instead of in one of these meetings where it's usually citizens sort of opposing citizens and the government's supposed to kind of interject themselves to make it all work, it appears to now be citizens against the local government. I think you guys really ought to ask, is this what we're supposed to be doing? And I don't think so. Thank you.
Let me just say something that, according to the document I have, I was supposed to say at the end. I will tell you, written comments, questions, and other documents will be accepted by the county until the public hearing is formally closed in 2 weeks on April 6th. So this is not the last opportunity.
And that's a change since the original document went out. So just so people know that
3 weeks.
That was not the original notice that we got, just so you know. Not. I'm just putting that out there. Diane Feldman, 1404 Hanshaw Road. I don't necessarily think that people are totally against sidewalks in the neighborhood. I think the way that it's getting done is the problem. People are going to lose trees. They still haven't figured out the water drainage system coming from Sapsucker Woods. One response to that was, well, it's not our problem once we figure out the water drainage after it leaves us. It'll just be somebody else's problem. But that's not what we're supposed to be doing in a community. We're supposed to be thinking about each other and how what we do will impact other people. You're building a sidewalk without lights. You're encouraging people to walk in darkness. You know, that's not necessarily the best thing. I've heard that widening the roadway, it's not going to speed traffic. They're already doing 50 and 60 down Hanshaw Road at a 40-mile-an-hour limit. What makes you think widening the road is going to make it them go slower? I think that's just not thinking clearly. I know you want the I know some of you want the project done. As you pointed out, there's federal money, and let's use it. But let's use it wisely. You did Warren Road, and you realized after you did it that it was wrong, that it wasn't wide enough. Why don't we use that as an example and say, okay, let's do it the right way instead of hurrying up to use federal funds and do the roadway, and in, what, a couple of years, you'll fix it again? I don't think that's really what the residents in the community want. I think the residents want a community, and I don't think that that's what's going to happen with this plan. So it's not the sidewalks that I don't think people are concerned that, oh my God, they're putting sidewalks in. I think taking 20 feet of someone's property to put a sidewalk in is a big difference than just saying we're putting a sidewalk in. And when Mr. Rosen spoke, he said, you could take 4 feet of my property to put a sidewalk in. That's great. But it's 20 to 25 feet of my property. You're going to be sitting in my front yard as you were sitting in her front yard, you know, in her house. And I don't think that's fair to the residents in the community. And maybe you should all, and I did this up Muriel Street after we found out about the size of the width of the property. I actually walked out the 15 and 20 feet on people's property, and they didn't realize how much that was. And maybe if you all actually looked at your own property and walked off the distance 15, 20 feet, whatever the number is this week, because it does change all the time, maybe if you actually measured that property out, you'd be surprised at how much it is. That it's not just a number on a piece of paper. It's not just, oh, 15 feet today, 20 feet tomorrow. Oh, we forgot the utility poles. That's another 2 feet. Actually walk it off in your own homes and see what it does to your property and what it's going to do to the community that you live in if you don't live on Hanshaw Road. Thank you.
I'd like to thank everyone for coming. Is there anybody else? All right, I'd like to thank everyone for coming this evening. Again, written comments, questions, and documents will be accepted by the county until the public hearing is closed at 5:30 p.m. on April 6th, 2010. That's 3 weeks. Thank you, Kathy, not 2 weeks. Please submit your written statements to Kathy Covert, Clerk of the Legislature, 320 North Tioga Street, Ithaca, New York. These written statements will be incorporated into the hearing record. I now adjourn this hearing. Thank you. I'd like to call the March 16th, 2010 meeting of the legislature to order. Please, would everyone join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, wait a minute. Okay, can we have a roll call of members, please? Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey? Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Cha?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Keeper is asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will have a short executive session tonight to talk about real estate negotiations. And I will, when we start with resolutions, I'll be looking at what staff and public are here for particular things and may shuffle as we go along. All right. Privilege of the floor for legislators. Peter.
I just wonder if I was noticed that I was here. I didn't hear my name.
I think I answered for you.
Okay.
We got you covered, Peter. Any legislators like to speak? Jim.
Thank you, Martha.
I'm going to read my statement so that I get it accurately. I have watched with a great deal of concern the community's reaction to the events at Pete's Grocery, an event which brought the real world a little bit closer to Tompkins County. The Ithaca Journal online comments to various articles in the newspaper have ranged from strongly supporting the role of the CNET group and their handling of the situation to condemning perceived unjust treatment of the person who was the focus of this event. This new level of journalism allows people to vent their frustrations in a faceless manner, and much of what is written is based only on the individual writer's perception of the truth, and is often filled with unsubstantiated facts and rumors. When I last looked, there were above 500 comments on most of the articles that have been written over the last few weeks. The appointing of the special prosecutor from Chemung County should go a long way towards sorting out the truth about this event. In the meantime, we have law enforcement people all over this county who do their work 24/7 without any newsworthy incidents. They have been sworn to serve and protect, and I believe they do their jobs well. I would guess that many of our law enforcement people are now a bit more apprehensive about their daily work than they were prior to this event. Their anxieties may be legitimate or unfounded, but it is likely they do exist. As the investigation comes to a close and the findings are made public, there will be people who will be satisfied and those who will be dissatisfied with the results. It will be a critical time for elected officials and community members to demonstrate leadership and support the findings of the investigation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Nathan?
Yes. I would like to let everybody know about an event that will be taking place at Cornell tomorrow on Hope Plaza, I believe. Tomorrow, Wednesday, March 17th from 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m., and it's an event to reflect on the recent tragedies that have occurred at Cornell University regarding those students that have taken their own lives. This event will be an opportunity for people to reflect on these events and reaffirm life and also celebrate being part of community and actually taking some time to relax with each other and be with each other. The Cornell Student Assembly, administration, counseling services, a large array of student organizations will all be there, and it will kind of be an opportunity for people to come together in this difficult time. I was just to give an example, I was in College Town on like a Friday afternoon, and I walked into the Green Cafe, and there were people crying. Just crying, in the public eating area because of the most recent, the third most recent suicide. So it's a tough time, especially in my district, and I hope that that as many people can make it to this event.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Three for you. First, just to let you, in case you missed the news article regarding the NYSEG Public Service Commission review of the rate increase that I've been harping on for a while, Broome County has challenged through their county executive the rate increase, and they're circulating paperwork on to any other county that might be interested in doing the same. So we put a request. I did put a request in to at least receive a copy of it. The second, the other, it's like Chinese water torture, isn't it, when I mention Universal Fund? Just so you know, the Universal Fund received national recognition this morning in regard to the broadband discussion that the FCC is presently conducting. We sent notices out to all the schools, all the libraries, and including Cornell, Ithaca College, TC3, because last week and this week are the days that they're receiving comments. The FCC is receiving comments on expanding broadband. But at least the financial news this morning recognize that there is a universal fund, and they're sitting on something in the neighborhood of $11 billion that they collect periodically from all of us, because the FCC is not sure how they're going to finance the broadband piece. So we might yet make some headway on that one. The last one I need your help on. We're in the process now of getting the flags for the Memorial Day decorations on all of the veterans' graves in the county. And usually we work this through the VFW downtown, and purchasing is in the process of doing that. Where I need some of your help, if you know of an organization in your community, the American Legion, the Vietnam Vets, or whoever it happens to be, that has taken on responsibility for decorating a cemetery. I know in Dryden, the Veterans Home, they call it the Veterans Home, it's the group at the top of the hill, take the responsibility for doing the major cemetery in Dryden on Route 13. If you can let me know what organizations you might be aware of that do that, I'd really appreciate it, because we want to try to give them a little recognition along with the VFW this year. And one luncheon announcement. COFA is having the Office of the Aging is having their 35th annual luncheon for their advisory committee. Admittedly, you have a little time to plan for this. It's May 11th. You should be receiving an invitation in your boxes. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. Jim?
Martha, I think you may have left out the public portion of the privilege. I don't remember you asking for the public.
At the time, I made an editorial judgment and didn't see any members of the public. But that's a good point. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak to us on any issue? Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Jim. Any other legislators? Pat.
As I was walking out to get my mail today, my neighbor came by, and she's waving a piece of paper, and she said, "See, Pat, I've filled it out already, and I'm putting it in the mail." And she was getting ready to mail back her census form. And I congratulated her, and I said, "That's great." And I just wanted to say that I'm confident that the town of Lansing will once again reach the 80% or better return rate for the census forms this year, and I'd like to invite not only my colleagues but all the residents of Tompkins County to join us in making sure that the next time the map goes up on the wall, that every town and every village and every municipality in Tompkins County is at the 80% or better return rate. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. The map you're talking about is next to Jay there. It's the census results from the census in 2000. Pam, is that on the web anywhere? Is that available?
I'm not sure that particular map. Oh, where is he?
Other side.
His hat's there, but he's not there. There is a ton of information on our website now. And that may be there, but I'm just not sure, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Pam. Will?
Just wanted to add to Pat. I filled out my census today. It took me. I decided to time it, and it took me, I think, 1 minute and 30 seconds to complete the entire form. And I also relative to the website. I was looking just on our website and quickly finding a link to the census. I'm sure it's probably there, but it didn't scream out. If you go to the Town of Ithaca website, there's a very big graphical representation, which is similar to the little leaflet that we all got in our mailbox today. So I would, anything we can do to make it, to remind people is very, very helpful.
Thank you. Pam.
Well, I have to say, we seem to be in a little competition here. That the Tompkins County website, it has a link. It says 2010 census right there on the front page, and there is a ton of information available beneath that link. And it sounded to me that when Pat was talking about sending in her census form, and then Will started talking about sending in his census form, that there's a bit of the competitiveness among communities here. And I think that that's a healthy thing for us to have, but I think it would be well if we actually spread that into our communities and we were all racing to our mailboxes as fast as we can so we can beat the folks out in Lansing. Or Dryden. Or wherever. So, in other words, there's nothing wrong with Lansing. Lansing does very well. I'm just saying that we all should be there, being as competitive as we possibly can be.
And whose picture was in the journal?
Well, I'm competitive.
Peter.
Well, I was Johnny on the spot. I would like to report that I could hardly wait till it came and I saw it in the mail. I took it out and ripped it open and filled it out real fast. Right? It takes a couple of minutes to fill it out. And I put it in the envelope and licked it and then ran out and put it in the post box. And then a little bit later, I don't know, after the mail was picked up, I read the instructions. I made a mistake. Now, I'm not going to say my name so that they won't do it, but it says, fill out in black pen.
Oops.
And I filled it out in black pencil. And I'm sitting here really wondering if I have done a terrible disservice to my county and my town.
Well, the county may not hit 100,000, Peter, as a result, but that won't affect the city's goal of hitting 30,000, I guess. Carol,
I have to assure Peter that the worst that will happen to you is that you will get a visit later asking for a correction. So any of us who don't fill them out, you will get visited. The concern in the community is that for those of us who are, those visits won't happen until June or July. So for those of us in the community who are not in residence in June and July, although we're in residence a lot of the rest of the year, that will be a big problem. So that we really need a push for those who won't be here later. You will get counted, but we do urge people to follow all the instructions and send them right in.
Thank you, Carol. Wild horses won't drag me away in June and July.
Answer your door if they come.
And Frank has reminded me that that villager elections are today. Polls are open until 9 p.m., although Trumansburg is the only district. Are you going to vote, Jim?
I already did that.
Okay. Well, Trumansburg is the only area where there's a contested vote. It is important for people to get out to the polls in those village elections. Mike, did I see your hand up?
Well, you just took one of the things I was going to say. Thank you, Frank, for trying to remind folks in our county about the village elections. They're so important. Villages do such a great job with such a little bit of money. But I wanted to thank two of my colleagues here for their statements tonight. One was Jim Dennis. I thought that was a very poignant and appropriate comment that you made, Jim. And Nathan, I think we're all hurting over this sadly annual event of losing wonderful people to pressures and anxieties of our society. Unfortunately, that goes back many, 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 many years to the founding of the university and the fact that we happen to have gorges. But I've been so impressed by the students up there have taken it on themselves to try to do something about this, stationing themselves at bridges to smile at people, to paste notices up there, to tell them that they're cared about. And we need to do that kind of thing, because when a person is so depressed that he or she thinks there's no way out, they need to know that there are people around them and that there is a way out.
Thank you very much, Mike. Anyone else? Kevin.
Thank you, Martha. I just wanted to remind people or inform those of you who may not know, and hopefully the public, that there's a strong movement in Ithaca due to the high immigrant population to support comprehensive immigration reform. You've heard a little bit about this in the past. There's a bus going to Washington, and if you want to get an opportunity to ride on that bus or to support the efforts of the people who are going, some of whom might not be able to afford to pay for the cost of the bus, I think it's like $15 a person. The Tompkins County Workers Center is a good focal point for that, and you could contact them or drop by and drop them an envelope and say, you know, this is to support your efforts or to support the efforts of the comprehensive immigration reform bus that's leaving. I believe it's going, let's see if I got this right, y'all correct me if you can remember, it's leaving at 4 a.m. on, is it Saturday morning? And it's returning late Sunday night. Anybody here know that? I believe that's right. Yeah, and I think it's really important that we have a strong Ithaca contingent because, in part because of the student population and in part because of the agricultural efforts in our community, we have a strong immigrant population here, and we need to recognize that comprehensive immigration reform is part of our economic development here in this county, and that finding ways to support that will help everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Anyone else? Well, this is not going to be a meeting for the textbooks, so I'm told that Mr. McAdams is here to speak about one of our later resolutions. Now would be a good time, sir, if you'd like to address the group, the legislature.
I'm Alan McAdams. I'm in the Johnson School, and I'm here to support your counties and the communities' support of the broadband request for information by Google. One of the greatest factors would result if we were to win the competition to be the selected community for bringing in the very high speed networking, because Google pays for it. And I understand that you had sticker shock at some earlier meeting because somebody mentioned $880,000 that might have to be made available from this community. The beauty is that if Google selects us, then they pay for the ultra-high speed networking in the community. They're looking for an opportunity to have a demonstration project, and we have a lot of advantages for a demonstration project. So if you have a chance to vote for something that says you want to support the request for information, response to a request for information by Google, please do so. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Are there any questions? We'll discuss the resolution as it comes up. Thank you. All right. Thank you all. Jay, why don't you come on up. Do you have a PowerPoint or anything to get ready? Okay. Our special presentation tonight is Jay Franklin, Interim Director of Assessment. In your packets, you had this report on the Continual Equity Maintenance Program. So we'll turn it over to Jay.
I didn't put a PowerPoint presentation together because I figured something would happen to it. And now I'm looking for my sheet of paper with all my notes on it. Figure I'd go old school, and of course I won't be able to find it. Here we are. Thanks for allowing me this time to come here and give this presentation. Since I was appointed director on November 1st of last year, I saw a report that Nassau County put out, and they're the other semi-countywide assessing unit, and they put out a mid-year report to try to get some public information out there regarding what they're seeing in the real estate market, and I figured it's about time that we put together a end-of-year report. On March 12th, we sent out preliminary assessment change notices, and that report that's on your desk is a way to try to get some information out there about what we're seeing and why we made the decisions that we made. The sky is not falling here in Tompkins County. We are starting to see a slow, gradual downturn in the real estate market, notably within the $500,000 market. But the lower price, the $200,000 homes, they're still very steady. Interest rates are under 5%. There's the first-time home buyers, income tax credit of $8,000. The long-time home buyers or long-time homeowners is what I call the $6,500 credit. And that really seemed to keep that low end of the market in place. A couple other reasons. There's still money to lend here. The local banks are still wanting to lend money. We have very few foreclosures within the county. Still a low unemployment rate. We have the stabilizing influence of Cornell and Ithaca College. We haven't seen the appreciation that other parts of the county saw over the last 7-8 years. We didn't see the 25% per year, the 50% per year. We still tracked along nice at, 5-10%. And we didn't have the speculative building that other municipalities had. We don't see a lot of vacant subdivisions with houses that were built and no one living in them. On Friday, we sent out a assessment change notices to all properties whose change in value since the 2009 assessment roll to what we have done up to today. We sent out 2,787 changes of assessment. 719 of those were decreases in assessment. So yes, assessments do go down. Our values go as the real estate market does. So that leaves 2,068 increases in assessment. And about 1,000 of those increases were due to some sort of physical change, a new parcel being created. So we didn't have a lot of market change. We did do a parcel-by-parcel data collection in the towns of Lansing, Dryden, Enfield, and Newfield, and picked up some new construction that we may not have had or saw a value which was low or high, and we made that adjustment to bring the property's worth within to 100% of fair market value. Our sales ratio that we reviewed, I know I'm going to get technical now. This is the part I enjoy, the CODs and the PRDs and standard errors of the estimate, so I'll try to tone that down for you. But the sales ratio is really what we judge our assessment roll on. How do our assessments match up to what sale prices are occurring? And we take that ratio, we take the assessment and divide it by the selling price. If that ratio is under 1, we're under-assessing properties. If it's over 1, we're over-assessing properties. So for the, I think, 606 sales that were from July 1 of 08 to July 1 of 09, our average ratio of assessment to sale was at 99%, pretty much right on. Our median ratio was at 1. Our PRD, which shows if we're under-assessing high-priced properties and over-assessing low-priced properties, was right at 1. Acceptable range for that is 0.98 to 1.03. Our COD, how far on average we're off, was 5%, which is, perfect. You're not going to get much better than what those numbers are showing us. But that's for the county. We did take a look by town, by neighborhood, to take a look to see if there's any subcategory. Are we over-assessing those higher-priced houses? A school district within a township? And all of those sales ratios are included within your report and will be posted on our website. I'm not going to go through all of that statistical data here, or I'll have you asleep. A couple of key projects I want to highlight that we did review. Where the assessment generally decreased in the town of Ithaca, in the Grandview subdivision, Terrace View, Sunnyview Lanes off of State Street and Honest Lane, and the Southwoods subdivision off of East King Road. In the town of Lansing, we took a look at the high-end subdivisions. That's that $500,000 market that really slowed, fueled by the number of houses that were put on when Emerson decided to leave the community. Where the assessment generally increased was the common land planned unit development within the town of Ithaca off of State Street or Route 79. and we took a look at the assessment equity. When we reviewed the sales, we saw there was something going on within a neighborhood, so we went in and took a look at it. Some values may have increased, some may have decreased. But that was in the town of Danby, kind of close in that neighborhood. Eastwood Commons, planned unit development, Deer Run, Main Street within the town of Newfield, and then also the lakefront on the west side of the lake. Also included within the report is an outlook for 2011. I don't know what the real estate market's going to be like on July 1 of 2010. If I could predict what the real estate market was going to do, I wouldn't be here right now. I'd be a real estate investor and be making a lot more money than I am right now. But what we are seeing right now, and if things do trend, sales are slowing, the number of sales, the time that a property is on the market starting to slow down. More properties are selling for under our assessment than have sold in the past. From July 1, 2008 to July 1, 2009, out of the 602 sales, 59 sold under our assessment, 105 sold over our assessment. From July 1, 2009 to January 2010, 439 sales, 107 sold under our assessment, and only 68 sold for over. So we're starting to trend to see that value go down. Some of the issues that we're going to be dealing with within the future, obviously the oil and gas leasing, and that effect that may or may not have on property value. It may be a twofold issue. It may be a positive to some property types and a negative to others, but it's something we're starting to gather. I believe we're the only assessing unit within New York State that's starting to record what rights are conveyed in a real property transaction to see if the mineral rights were retained by the prior owner, how long they may have been retained for, or if they were totally conveyed, and also which properties have oil and gas leases on it, to see if a property who may not have that lease but may be affected by a neighboring property that does have that lease. So we're trying to gather that data to be able to make a educated, informed opinion on value. As the reliance on the real property tax increases, we'll have more scrutiny on our department. With school taxes going up, town taxes going up, and I'm sure county taxes going up, we'll have more people coming into our office to review their assessment. The real property tax is the only tax that you can contest. You can't yell at the IRS and say you're collecting too much money. The sales clerk at Target is not going to show any leniency when they're collecting their sales tax. But we're the one office where you can come in. And while we can't discuss the property tax, we're more than willing to review anyone's assessment. If we're wrong, we'd be the first office to say, yes, we're wrong. We're going to correct that. And that's it. So thank you for allowing me to present this. If you have any questions, more than willing to answer them.
Pam.
I just have all those figures that you were starting off there, are they in here?
Yes. All except for the change notices figures, because I had to get that report off one day before we had the change notices. Okay. So I can reproduce my note sheet and get that off to you.
Will.
Thank you, Martha. Jay, the other day the paper was listening, made a list of all the things that one might want to submit a FOIA request, and I was surprised to see them suggest that you might need to this if you wanted to comparable values of properties. Am I not correct that one can go right down to your office and sit at a computer and be led through the process, and you don't have to fill out fancy paperwork? Is that true?
That is true, and you don't even need to come down to our office. All of our data is online. You can search for comparable sales, comparable assessments. If you don't have internet access, if you're in the rural area, you have dial-up, you don't want to deal with it, come down to our office. We have 5 public computers, and within 5 minutes, you'll see everything on your property. Within 10 or 15, you'll see everything on all of the properties that have sold or what they're assessed at. But, yeah, we've received 3 or 4 FOIL requests in my 14 years at the assessment office, and it was all for data that we would have just given them. There's no need to FOIL our office. If it's there, we'll just give it to you. Just ask. It's a lot easier.
Thank you.
Thanks for raising that, Will.
Peter and then Carol.
I have a couple of questions. The first is this high-end softening that I've heard about. In percentage values, could you give me just some idea of what range it's in?
It's probably down about 3-4%.
Okay, thanks. That's the first question. And the second, were you here at the public hearing about the sidewalks?
Yes.
Well, there was one sardonic question that got asked, namely, will you immediately lower our property values if the easements are carried out? And I sort of wondered to myself, what's the answer to that question? Will they be lowered automatically, or do you have to wait to get market experience, which would take forever, I can imagine?
Well, we'd have to wait for the market to show that widening on that specific property is a detriment to value. Looking at where it's happened in other places in the community, there's not a direct effect to say there's a 5-10% decrease. Some properties will definitely not show that there is an effect. Some properties may show that there is an effect. From a personal experience, I lived on North Tripphammer Road when that was widened. Honestly, I couldn't tell where the widening happened, so it didn't affect where my area was. Further down where the houses were closer to the road, it may have affected that value, but we're more than happy to adjust values as values go according to what happens within the real estate market.
But it wouldn't be like automatic, whereby if I lost a certain fraction of my property, then automatically the assessment of my property went down. Nothing like that.
Well, it may, but we would have to take a look at that property individually. I don't know the extent of the road widening, but you know, anytime a property is reduced in size, there may be that negative effect on value. And if we can measure that, we will make that adjustment as soon as possible. But until we can measure that, we can't make an adjustment.
And it's possible that sidewalk would add attractiveness and value to a neighborhood, so it could go in that direction as well?
Correct. We have no idea what's going to happen until it does happen. I can't predict the market.
Carol, and then who else did I see? Pam?
Thanks, Jay. You thanks for the job that you do all year. You do your office does a good job with some tough material in a fair manner, I think. And I have two questions. One is, I know that assessment grievance day is coming up in May. Are you still looking for people to volunteer, for the community members of that operation from our various communities? Was one question. And then this report that you've given us, which is quite thorough, tell me to what extent this includes commercial property reports and calculated into your averages and those portions of nonprofit, nonprofit organizations that have taxable property as part of their portfolios.
I'll see if I can remember everything here. Question one, the Board of Assessment Review. I think tonight we have a resolution to appoint 6 temporary hearing panel members to supplement the 3 full-time bar members. However, each town appoints a local advisory Board of Assessment Review, and that's a good avenue to have a person who's interested in serving on that board to then kind of move up to the county Board of Assessment Review. So you may want to contact your local municipality. I know some are always struggling to find people willing to serve, and some have people who have served for 10, 15, 20 years.
Okay, and then the question about the report was whether commercial and non.
The statistics that are in there are mostly residential, or probably 100% residential. Here we don't have a lot of sales for commercial properties. This year we didn't see a movement with their income or expenses. For income properties, you typically value them using the income approach to value. How much money is someone willing to pay for that property based upon the amount of net income that it can receive? So for those very few commercial sales, there's a lot of extra conditions that are involved in sales. So looking at what may be the highest and best use of that property. According to real property taxation, we have to value that property according to its current use. So an investor may look at it and say, I may be able to take this property and do X with it and is willing to pay more. So we really have a hard time stratifying those sales for commercial properties. And for the wholly exempt properties, I was still waiting for the March 1st deadline to come through in order to determine what properties will become taxable and which properties will become wholly exempt. So by around May 1st, I'll have a report for the legislature to say X amount of value was added to the assessment roll because properties didn't file for an exemption or was subtracted from the assessment roll.
So they are or they aren't included in the averages?
Wholly exempt is not.
Okay.
Brian?
Just real quickly, Jane. The change notices that you sent out, were they the vast majority or maybe wholly the areas that you spoke of that you rechecked? I heard Newfield and Dryden and those areas. I didn't hear you say Dryden, which is good because my first year on assessment review, I appreciate that if you did that on purpose.
There were some out there. We did have to take a look at the assessment equity for certain types of properties. From what I heard from our appraiser, they're more the one-story ranch type of house. But also, most of your changes would probably be just physical changes. You know, the municipality with the highest number of increases was the town of Danby at 259 changes. The town of Ithaca had the most decreases at 139.
Okay, I read through this. I didn't see much in our area, so thank you.
Frank and then Pam.
Jay, thanks for the blessing in Danby. And the one adjustment that you've made in Groton, isn't that Brian's home?
Yeah.
Can you remind people about the ag assessment date one more time, please?
Yep. The one exemption that's not due on March 1st but is due on April 1st is the ag land exemption. We will be sending out reminder phone calls to people who haven't applied for that probably sometime next week.
And also the Star Senior Citizen is one.
That deadline to apply was March 1st. However, the property owners have until April 15th to supply their income information. And if anyone has questions, they can call our office, 274-5517.
Thank you.
Pam.
I just have one little suggestion. I know we have a huge amount of tax-exempt property in Tompkins County, and somehow it doesn't seem right for us to be calling it wholly exempt. Perhaps unwholly exempt or some other. Sorry.
Do you have a comment on that?
No.
We're going to do a little juggling tonight, and I'm going to ask you to look at Resolution I. It's on the consent agenda, but I'm aware of who's in the audience. Without going through the whole consent agenda, if anybody's got a question at this point on I, you could ask Jay, and then he could go home. We don't have to vote on it, but if there are any questions on it. Okay, is there anything else for Jay? Joe.
Just a couple of very brief comments. First of all, so you know, Jay's doing a great job, and he's our newest department head. He's doing a great job. It's okay to pat ourselves on the back sometimes. And the operation that we run in assessment is considered a best practice in New York State. We do this job very well. I think all of you know that Jay has been making the rounds. He's been getting out of the office and visiting town halls and explaining this arcane science of property tax assessment, demystifying it, and I think that's a very good thing. And the fact that Jay can string a sentence together right now is pretty amazing in light of the fact that he and his wife just learned that they are expecting triplets. So
that's why. That's why he's going out now, because next year at this time, forget it.
Can we put those on the census forms as
no,
in anticipation?
And honestly, that's one thing I looked, but it did say April 1st, 2010.
Sorry, Pam.
So please feel free sometime August, September. Please call me to the office for any sort of meeting. I do plan on taking an extended leave, but I'll need to come in and get some rest. Or if you ever out in Lansing, please feel free and stop by and change a couple diapers. From what my wife Dixie tells me, we'll have 7,000 diapers to change in the first year.
Thank you very much, Jay. Appreciate all your work and your report. That's great. Thanks.
Have a good night.
You too.
I actually did have a question.
Jay, hold on. Sorry, Leslie.
It was a real simple question. I just want to know if any of the people or the members' names are new from last year. Are you?
Somewhat. Bob Walpole is new from last year. Bob served the prior 6 years on the board. He had to take a 1 year absence for a child's wedding. But other than that, they're the same usual suspects.
And could I ask a follow-up, just in terms of, I always ask this question, just in terms of outreach to get people to serve on this committee? I know we look for a certain kind of folks who are involved with real estate, et cetera. What kind of outreach is done to get people to serve on the Board of Assessment Review?
And I'll give my typical answer every year. This is a board that reviews our work. It's hard for us to recommend individuals to review any complaints from a property owner and our office. These six names were brought back forward because they were the ones who have served on it last year. If there are any interested individuals, you know, I would have them get in contact with Mike Lane, the chair of our legislative committee, to look forward to next year or this year. But
or if legislators have people that they'd like to suggest, then certainly, you know, that's something we can do.
Thank you, Jay.
Sorry.
Okay. Better go now.
All right.
Thank
Bye.
You. Thank you very much. Now, since we're already at 7:30, we're going to try to get to a break quickly, but I would like to do a couple of things first. If we could go to the PDEC report. Pam, you've got a couple of items with staff waiting, and then we'll go to GO with the Google amendment, the Google resolution.
Did we get through a consent agenda?
No, we didn't do consent. It would take a while just to read everything.
I just want to know. That's all.
Yeah. I want to just kind of make things
okay.
as hospitable as possible for our guests. So. If that's okay, want to go for it, Pam?
Okay, I would like to move Resolution L, authorizing submittal of the 2010 New York State Division of Housing and Community Renewal Community Development Block Grant Program application to continue the Tompkins County Home Ownership Program, and I so move.
Seconded by Will. Any questions? Ready to vote? All in favor? Please raise your hand. Any opposed? Frank, did I see your hand go up?
Oh, wait. Can I
just assume it's a yes?
That's a yes.
I need to just disclose and ask Jonathan, confirm with Jonathan. The application does not involve, as I understand it, any money that would involve salary for any of the housing organizations. Should they be chosen eventually to be part of this, it would be program funds and loan funds. May I vote?
I see no conflict with your voting.
It's good because she already did. So that was unanimous.
I've done that in private. I just wanted to disclose to my
friend. Right. Thank you. That was unanimous. Pam, next one.
Yes, Resolution M, the long-anticipated approval of bylaws and certificate of incorporation of the Tompkins County Development Corporation, and I so move, and I'd like to say something in a second.
Is there a second? Jim seconds.
Yes. I would love a unanimous second from everyone.
Let me say, Pam, in your packet, there's a revision of the bylaws, but the resolution itself is not revised.
That's right. It's a minor resolution, and I went around and told most of our legislators that this was happening. One thing I would just like to point out about this this long-awaited and thought-through bylaws is that the local development corporation that we are setting up is a local development corporation that will be focused on issuing bonds. Many of these local development corporations have been set up in New York State, and some of them have been used as a means to avoid prevailing wage. And this local development corporation will not have that ability. Any action that it takes outside of being of its bonding will have to be run through the legislature. So it is not something that will broaden the powers. And the whole reason that this was brought forward is because before this, the IDA had the ability to bond not-for-profit. And actually, it was a way that they received some funding for the IDA. And that was ended last year, as we've talked about many times. And this we are putting in place in hopes that it will once again give us the IDA some income and will allow, in terms of this bonding, that they will once again be able to bond and that there will be some income attached to it. So that is why we are where we are.
Anyone else? Any questions? Kathy?
I just want to explain to the public why I'll be voting no. I have a difference of opinion regarding whether or not nonprofits utilize their bonding at times in order to go non-union or to go non-local with their building projects. And we have recent history that says otherwise. In addition, I have some issues with I was glad there was a memorandum attached. Question 2 talks about the Public Authorities Accountability Act. I believe that the interpretation of the Public Authorities Accountability Act best practices that's being put forth by some parties in the community would ultimately take away from legislators the majority on the IDA and could end up affecting certainly this group by extension because of the way the two documents are interlocked. So I'll be voting no. I'm pretty certain I'll be in the minority as I have been, and I'm a voice in the wilderness on this, but I think it's important that somebody state what a logical extension of some of these practices and policies has led to in the past and can lead to in the future.
Thank you, Kathy. Nathan?
Yes, I'll be supporting this resolution today. Now that I'm a new member of the Industrial Development Agency, I've had a chance to sit down with Michael Stamm and review all the projects that have come through the IDA over the past several years. And many of the, I'd say, well, all of the projects for the most part, have contributed greatly to the economic and social fabric of this community. And I think it's a shame that we don't have that ability anymore, but it's great that through this creation of this local development corporation that we'll have that power once again. So I urge all of you to support it. However, I also do hear Kathy's concerns as well, and I think that since this will become, you know, these bonding decisions will have to come through the legislature, it will be our responsibility to make sure that prevailing wages and other important aspects of these decisions are brought forth and actually passed here at the legislature along with these projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Kathy and then Carol.
I just want to ask then, will it be within our authority to require prevailing wage on these nonprofit projects? Because I don't believe that for all the legislators' discussion that that's a provision that's anywhere in here.
Kathy? Heather, you want to take a stab at that? I mean, my sense is that that's a policy that could be established by the LDC.
That's correct, Martha. I'm Heather Filiberto. I'm from Tompkins County Area Development, and it is not a policy of the IDA, nor is it at the outset set up to be a policy of the Local Development Corporation. The IDAs throughout the state over the past several years have banded together and sort of talked about their ability to make that a local decision, and I would say that our IDA has been fairly progressive in looking at projects on a project-by-project basis, looking at the types of construction jobs and the types of skilled labor that they're using, and depending on the project, attaching percentages of living wage requirements or union labor and things like that. And our IDA, I think, has, and you can probably quote the IDA better than I can, Martha, but I think they have come out in statements and said that they would like to retain that authority locally on a project-by-project basis.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I'm looking for it here. I don't find it, but the purpose of the bylaws of the LDC or the intention of the LDC was that the policies such as encouraging living wage, encouraging local labor, were meant that the IDA does use were meant to be reflected also by the LDC. And since the members of the LDC will be the same as the members of the IDA, that should be pretty easy to do. So as far as, you know, we expect the policies to be continued as we've developed them to date. Carol?
Yeah, I was going to speak to this point and cite the particular place that it shows up here, which is in our packets, page 49. Article 6, Section 5 speaks to the policies of the corporation, and I share my colleague's concern that we continue as we move forward with both policies for the IDA and for this new TCDC to consider carefully what policies and practices we'd like to see. This Section 5 of Article 6 allows us to consider each of those practices individually. And institute in the future whatever practices we would like related to hiring, apprenticeships, wage levels, other matters like LEED certification, green operation, and other things. And the way it will work, as I understand it, having helped to write it, is that any policies that this body puts in place for these matters that are in effect on the day alone is made, an obligation is taken, will apply to the new obligation. So I would encourage us as we move forward, for those of us who share some of these concerns, to consider those practices in the future. I thought that this was a nice way to do this so that it doesn't hold up the creation of the local bonding ability while we hash those out, and leaves us the ability in the future as this body would like to discuss such policies to do so. While I have the floor, I'll also point out that the there was another matter that you raised, the appointment of the members. I am satisfied that the ability to appoint members to this new body rests squarely with the Tompkins County Legislature. So I certainly respect the rights of my colleagues to, you know, to vote against this. But on those two particular points, I think that we have them covered, and I am happy to support this. Thanks.
And I'll just say the record of, just a second, Frank, the record of what we've done so far with the IDA has been that over the years, the average non-management jobs has had a salary of more than $18 an hour. Is that right, Heather? Is that?
Yes, it is.
And the subsidy has only been $808 per job. So the record of this IDA with these policies is very good. Frank.
Thanks, Martha. I want to back up a step. When we started this, it seems like 100 years ago, the general purpose, as I recollect, was because the state had pulled the plug on the permission to lend to not-for-profits, this was an option that provided us the ability to do that, or any county that has the IDA, has an IDA, the opportunity to do something like this. So it fills the void and gives us an extra tool. That's, and I think the consistency that Martha mentioned and Carol referred to is appropriate, because it sort of melds the two organizations, or at least both organizations will abide by the same ground rules, if you will. A question that I have, though, consistently over the last several years, the IDA and TCAD have been concerned about their fees. And we've watched some of the IDA projects not generate as many fees as they had in the past. Without going through a lot of referrals in here, is TCAD or the IDA, the appropriate body that will be overseeing this, is there a fee structure for them to collect a fee on any of these projects in here? Just a simple yes or no.
I believe there is a fee structure.
That's it. Because I think that was part of the original concern as well, that we wanted to make sure that there was a funding stream, and that was why we didn't want to use the dormitory authority or refer to the dormitory authority, one of the key reasons. Thank you.
Yeah, Frank, if I'm hoping I'm not making this up, I think it's something like 0.5% of the value of the bond goes to the agency.
To the agency.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, are we ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, no, 13. All opposed? 1 opposed. That passes 13-1. Thank you, Heather. You can now have your baby. I think we've been working on this since you've been working on PERC. Pam, if you don't mind, we'll come back to the rest of your report.
That's fine.
Later. All right.
No,
thank you. And Mike Lane, if you could take your resolution cue. And that was, it's in your...
Sure.
It's in your folder, and it's not mailed with the agenda.
I think it went out to everybody by email ahead of time, too. Let me just preface by saying that Professor McAdams just talked about this competition by Google to find a community or communities where they could put a demonstration project in for high-speed internet, broadband, excuse me, has come to us, and we've had a meeting with various county people and folks at Cornell University about this, and we thought it was important that we pursue this the same as we pursue other such projects. And I really want to particularly speak of the work that those that have taken the task up at the committee. Our Deputy County Administrator, Paul Younger, has done a wonderful job. Ken Schlauter from the Tompkins Cooperative Extension, and Deb Grantham at Cooperative Extension at Cornell, who is a former Dryden Town Board member, are working on this very difficult response to express our interest in this project. This is not exclusive of other opportunities that we may be trying for. We may or may not be successful with this, but we feel it's important that the people of Tompkins County get every shot they can have to have broadband access, and do that in ways that may be affordable to our rural county. Because of that, we brought forth this at the GO committee, this endorsing resolution that I'll move now, endorsing a county response to Google Inc. Fiber to Communities request for information expressing interest in a fiber optic network trial. And I so move.
No seconds. Okay. Any questions? Any comments? Frank.
Thanks, Martha. Mike, the resolve refers to working with other communities and other municipalities. A monetary question. Generally, when we're working with other municipalities, they tend to look at the county as the one with the deep pockets. At realizing that some of this might involve some R&D work, and I commend Paula for the amount of work that she's done on these projects. But if we have to develop information by any other entity, and if I think you mentioned Cornell in there as well, will the other entities be asked to kick in a few bucks to help with the...
At this point, the county seemed to be the logical entity to move forward with this. We talked at the committee level, the ad hoc committee, about whether we should take this to TCOG, for example, or whether we should try to solicit resolutions from the various towns and villages and city. We simply didn't have time to do that. We're not making a financial commitment at this point for ourselves or anyone else. We're simply expressing interest and providing information so that Google can sort through the various applications or responses that it gets to see whether or not our community might fit into what it's looking for.
But, excuse me, a follow-up, though, Martha. I'm not suggesting a financial commitment to the project, to commit to the project. What I'm concerned about is the monetary commitment and the time our staff has to spend doing any research or providing data in order to compete for the monies. That's the part
that was not brought up. It was not really brought up with the people who could we could ask for something like that. But if I could personally make a comment, I think that something of this nature, broad enough to encompass all the towns and villages in Tompkins County, particularly the rural areas and the city, that I think that it makes sense for the county to shoulder that responsibility. Or to do the administrative work here.
Understanding that this is a short-term effort to get this in, and let me just add in here that a week ago we were looking at considering joining the application by STIRB, the Southern Tier East Regional Planning and Development Board. Application for stimulus funding for broadband, and we had to kind of make a relatively quick decision about whether we would participate, and that did involve a financial contribution. We called a meeting on, unfortunately, short notice, but we got a lot of you there and a lot of municipal officers there last Thursday, and had a very good discussion about this whole issue. And the upshot was that we felt there's definitely very strong interest in the community for better internet service, and not just the rural areas that don't have any, but areas that already have internet and high speed could benefit by greater capacity and by more bandwidth. So it really is a countywide issue. Mike has agreed to sort of continue to follow through with this NGO to look at the efforts that were made in something that was called the Electronic Futures Committee about 10 years ago, and two presentations by ECC Technologies to our, I think it was the Facilities Committee in the last 10 years, and then sort of bring it back to us, and I'm sort of considering establishing some kind of a community-wide steering committee that would not just encompass county legislators, but staff and municipal officials, people perhaps from some of the large employers, a broader group that really tackles this from the point of view of we need a plan. We keep sort of responding to proposals for money. We say, well, gee, can we apply for that money? We really need to sit down and say, what is it we decide we want? And how do we go about getting that? So I think this is something that we're going to keep talking about. Within TCOG, there are a number of areas where sort of county expertise has been used, expected, appreciated. So again, this will be sort of the structure of how these kinds of efforts work. I think will be something we consider over this coming year. Mike?
Martha, if I could just say one other point, Frank, to maybe come up on what you're asking. As far as Cornell is concerned and our discussions with the folks up there, this Google initiative probably wouldn't add a lot to Cornell's broadband capabilities, which it already has quite a bit of. It would really do more for the county and the rural areas than it would for the university. And we're appreciative of the help that the folks up there are willing to give us.
Pierre.
Well, there's no question that broadband is good, and there's no question that every time you do something, it costs money. And there's no question that we're under a certain amount of financial strain. So it does seem to me that the question that Frank raises is a legitimate one, and it might be a good idea if when people come when people come to the legislature with something that everyone realizes is good, what a wonderful thing is if Google came and gave us for free a huge broadband thing, that they ought to have some idea about how much money is it going to cost to make this application. My guess is it probably isn't very much, but at least that I would think that that ought to be, or that it would be reasonable to have that a general part of requests like this.
Hold on, Frank. Mr. McAdams, why don't you? You probably, it seems you have something to say to add to this discussion.
I have sent out emails on this issue, and I think it's important to recognize that the information that Google is asking for exists. Then the question is, can we assemble it? And there's a place where I think I can help. I have some student teams that say that they would be happy to help to assemble some of this information. So it does not involve developing information, which can be very costly to do. But there's been a lot of fiber optics built in this community, and that information does exist, and people agree that in fact is the case. So we're not talking about building information new. We're talking about assembling information which does exist, and our time frame suggests we couldn't do the first, but we can do the second. If we organize to do that, and there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of enthusiasm behind doing that. So we don't anticipate the informal groups that have been gathering that we need to develop new information. And I'm working with other parts of the country. And they say if they are making a stimulus proposal, that the stimulus proposal requires the development de novo of the kinds of information which we're talking about. They also say that once they put in a stimulus proposal, it will just take a very short period to reassemble that information and send it in to Google. So I don't think we're talking about any really significant financial kind of expectations at the moment.
This resolution is not about whether municipalities are going to put money in. We can take that up at the appropriate time. And I'd really like to move to a vote on this. Okay. Frank, Kathy, Carol, Pat.
I don't want anyone to think that I'm not in favor of broadband expansion. I don't think anybody can around this table can ignore the fact that some of us have been trying very hard. And I think the expression of the money, just as Martha just explained it, I certainly understand what the purpose of this resolution is. But I'm going the next step. And I want to say that very candidly, if Alan McAdams is behind this, anybody from Brooktondale has a lot of credibility with me. And so Alan is
Forrest Holmes.
I know you moved, but I remember the old days. So anyway, thank you, Martha.
Kathy?
Thank you, Martha. there's a whole lot going on for me about this, and part of it is because of my awareness of the importance of this kind of communication to underrepresented communities. I've heard some phrases that jumped out at me, and one of them was how important this is, and the other is how quickly we have to assemble this information. I was at a capital plan review committee recently, and we listened to Ed Marks, the commissioner of planning, and also public works commissioner, talk to us about deferred maintenance and the impact that that has on us in the short and long term. We had a presentation and a visit from a representative of the Unified Court System, which is very eager to displace us from the County Office for the Aging and other parts of the building that they have been after us for a while to get. And there's a price tag attached to those and to many other things that we're looking at. I heard members of the public tonight talking to us about how we accepted federal money because it would help us out, but their contention was that the project that we were doing was inappropriate in some ways. I want to say that I really support the notion of us reaching out to try and figure out how to do this, especially for the underrepresented groups and the rural areas that are not presently covered. I'm concerned at the haste with which we're going after this. I was on facilities a couple of years ago, I think it may be more than that, when we got a presentation from a group that wanted to assemble, as the professor alluded to, information that we've already got and to help us understand how connecting will help us out. I have no argument that we have access to the information and that assembling it will be very good. I read recently in the Chronicle of Higher Education about the importance of college communities and universities stepping up around broadbanding and supporting efforts in their communities. My concern, however, is that the support doesn't extend to maintenance, and if it's a private-public partnership, I have concerns very similar to the ones that I expressed in my lone dissenting vote for the whatever y'all call it, TCDCDA or what, that is going to be subject to the best practices APA interpretation and will ultimately, I believe, result in limited representation of elected officials. And my concern, to get back to my point, is that we're going to have private buildings of these infrastructures by non-local people at a lowest wage possible, but then the county's going to be stuck footing the bill for maintaining it. Now, anybody, well, not anybody, but those of us familiar with facilities can tell you when you build something to the lowest bid, sometimes you don't get the best quality, and when it's built in the private sector and there's no stewardship or responsibility for the upkeep, it's a problem. These are my concerns, and I need to go on record with them because this sounds wonderful, and it doesn't commit us to anything, and it's talking about, this is the phrase that jumped out at me, a meaningful and competitive response. That sounds good to me, okay? So I'm willing to support it, but not without all those caveats, because I don't want anybody in the public to think that I'm signing a blank check for Tompkins County, because I disagree with some of the sentiments that were expressed that the county should have or should take responsibility for this. I don't necessarily think that that's the tenor of the discussion that I want to have with the present timing. It's just, as someone said recently, very bad timing for this. It's not that it's not needed. It's just really bad timing to put this out to the public, to tell the public that we're willing to take on a fiscal responsibility like this. So if Google wants to give us something, I want to look at it long and hard and make sure that there's not more to it in terms of cost for us than we can bear.
Carol Pat Jim.
I believe that broadband is a service that that we're beginning to realize as a society that it's like a basic utility. It's like electricity and phone. It used to be. We have to have this for our residents. But for this particular application, I want to make sure that people understand, and I was at these meetings, that this particular one is not more or less than what it really is. This is not
the federal effort, either the one that has been out there with the $7 billion that's going to be available through these various rounds, and that we have decided not to move forward with the STIRB application. And it's not the new federal effort that's been in the news the last few days that the administration is talking about. This is a particular opportunity by Google. It's a needle in a haystack. It is, they're going to be picking five or six communities in the entire nation to test a new technology that they're developing. This is a pre-application. If we were to be successful, what we would get would be Google would come here and talk to us further, and we would at that point have to have a more extensive conversation. It's not the kind of thing, I don't think, that even usually comes to this body when our staff put in these pre-applications. So I just want people to understand that. And then in terms of the staff time, it's due March 26th. And as I understand it, and maybe Paul might want to have the opportunity to comment on this, we've got three people taking the lead on actually putting together the application, the pre-application. Paula, who is half-time, Ken Schlauter, who is full-time, and Deb Grantham, who is full-time. So in terms of the proportion of time that we're putting into it, I think it's not the highest, and I hope that we can continue doing this. Out of Paula, if I misspoke, you could correct me.
If I can remind us, this is a resolution that says, yeah, let's apply for this free thing. Okay, so it doesn't commit us to anything. Pat and Jim.
I am definitely going to support this application. In fact, I think that we would be remiss, given the opportunity that exists to apply for it, if we didn't. So I'll just say that. I am wondering in this second line of the resolve, if we have an extra local, the word local, the second one doesn't seem to need to be there. Partnership with local municipalities and other local public and private entities.
Probably other local, those should be switched. Other local public and private entities?
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's it. Okay.
All right, mover and second. Friendly. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, Jim.
I'm going to mercifully ask to call the question. And for anyone's information, Google is a company. I see the $585 a share go by every day on CNBC. I recognize it's not a government yet.
Okay, with that debate, but after you ask to call the question to shut off debate, is there a second to call the question? All right, which is not debatable. So all in favor of calling the question, which is going directly to a vote, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Against? 1. Question is called 13 to 1. So all those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Any opposed? That's unanimous. So a lot of discussion for unanimous resolution. I want to just ask, when I lived in Cleveland, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was being cited, and one of the community enthusiasm for the project was part of getting the Hall of Fame cited in Cleveland. So is that part of this? If we send 100,000 emails to Google that says, we really want to have this here, will that help our application? Do we have any?
I think it may well. Because they are looking for a community that can join with them almost immediately. And as I was talking on several phone calls today, one of the reasons why Google might select us is because Cornell Cooperative Extension. We operate in every county in the state. And what they want to do is to have a demonstration project. So if what they do is successful here, we have an automatic
amplifier that can take it throughout the whole state. And they're looking for pre-existing opportunities that can support what they're doing. This is a very unusual situation. And I will say no more.
All right, thank you. Perhaps if everybody sends in their census form, they can send a letter to Google. So, all right, we are going to take a 7-minute break. Okay, please come back at 17 after. Thank you.
Someone coming down.